First Person Advisors is now a subsidiary of NFP, the fifth largest insurance broker in the world, combining local expertise with access to global capabilities and solutions. Learn more at firstpersonadvisors.com.
We preserved those wonderful memories of the Coliseum, and now we're going to open it back up for new memories for people to cherish as much as the old memories they have on the Coliseum.
Cindy Hoy counts preserving the iconic 82-year-old Coliseum at the Indiana State Fairgrounds as one of the biggest highlights of her career, one that has spanned 34 years at 38th and Fall Creek, 17 as the woman in charge. Coliseum is special to Hoy. She ice skated and watched horse shows there as a little girl. But it goes deeper than that. She practically grew up at the fairgrounds. Her grandparents lived in an apartment across the street, giving her a bird's eye view of 4-H kids unloading their animals. Her dad won the Better Baby Award in 1925, and she was crowned State Fair Rabbit Queen in 1972. Little did she know then that she would one day lead a massive transformation of the Indiana State Fairgrounds, which today is a 365-day-a-year operation with $200 million in direct economic impact and more than 2 million visitors annually. Get to know Indiana State Fair Commission Executive Director Cindy Hoy on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. Well, Cindy Hoy is a city girl who's always had a soft spot in her heart for Indiana agriculture. She grew up in Indianapolis, graduated from North Central High School, and then went on to attend Southern Methodist University. It was there in the Lone Star State that she really got her first taste of working at a state fair, serving as an intern at the mighty Texas State Fair, and she's never looked back. After a stop at the Wisconsin State Fair, Cindy came home in 1988, taking a job as Indiana State Fair Marketing Director. She worked her way through the ranks to eventually become the Indiana State Fair Commissioner in 2004. And I'm really pleased to have Cindy Hoy as my guest this week on the podcast. Cindy, how are you?
Oh, doing great, Gary. I mean, it's getting to be showtime, so we're really excited.
Yeah. Now you have to be getting excited, nervous, kind of fired up this time of year. We're less than 2 weeks away from the 2021 Indiana State Fair, and that is what a marquee event it is for our state. But it is a real grind for you and your staff and the team there at the Indiana State Fairgrounds.
Yeah, I mean, we look forward to it so much every year, and you know, had a little hiccup last year and had to do something a little bit different, but we always are filled with anticipation at this moment. It's almost like you're preparing for Christmas morning, and you know what's in the packages, and you know your family's going to gather together, the people that, you know, appreciate this institution and love it, and we're just so excited to unwrap those packages opening day, July 30th.
Cindy, what was it like last year not having the fair canceled, obviously, because of the pandemic? What was the impact? What was the kind of the personal feelings of you and your staff and those farmers from around the state, 4-H'ers from around the state?
Well, if you think about the fair, the impact really were these small businesses. If you think about these concession families, one, the carousel concessionaires that are across the street that are in Southern Indiana, and just knowing how devastating not having our event and other events throughout the summer impacted their business. I think that was the biggest sadness for me, is understanding how financially it would affect those small businesses and some of our larger partners too. We actually went ahead and put on 4-H competitions so the 4-H'ers could show their livestock, and the 4-H projects were here. We did some virtually and then we did some live. So we wanted to make sure, I mean, that's always our foundation, is agriculture and youth. So we wanted to make sure at least we could do that, which we did. But those smaller businesses, the concessions, the vendors that are in the exposition hall, some of those in the Ag Court building, didn't have an opportunity last year, and they are so excited and grateful to be coming back this year.
And this year, I think the theme of the fair is representative of kind of that, comeback story, if you will, celebrating the Hoosier spirit. Talk about the theme at this year's fair and really what it's all about.
Well, you think about it. This past year has been a story of resiliency, I think. And so we wanted to honor that story, elevate it. And, hearing from those hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers that didn't have their fair last year, there was a sense of, gosh, they lost a little bit of the magic. And so we wanted to bring back that spirit for this year and pay tribute to the Hoosiers that had really had to be resilient over a very challenging year.
Cindy, you and I go way back. I won't say how far back, but I feel very fortunate to count you as a friend. And we certainly worked together. I was a reporter at Channel 6. You were the marketing director there at the fair in the late 80s and early 90s. And the fair was it was still a major event. Channel 6, other stations did as well. We were the fair station, if you will. So we really did a lot of coverage there. But the fairgrounds was a different place back then.
Yeah. And one of the things that I look at are those pivotal moments in our history. I mean, this institution has been around 164 years. So one of those pivotal moments that happened was in the early 90s when the State Fair Commission was developed as the fiduciary policymaking institution. But also coupled with that was the legislature that funded through riverboats a financial way to take this institution out of deferred maintenance and into preventative maintenance, and did that with a stream of revenue that really has updated a lot. I'm not going to say all the buildings on the campus, but a majority of the buildings on the campus. So, back in the day when you and I were in the early 90s doing our thing out here, it really took that legislative support and the governor's support that said, look, this is an important institution in the state of Indiana. It's important for our agriculture. It's important for our youth. It's important for just the economic impact to the city and where it's located. It means jobs. And so let's take care of it. There are many states that have chosen not to do that, but Indiana collectively on all tiers has led the charge in preserving their iconic institution of the fairgrounds.
So there was political leadership and other leadership that made that happen. Without that leadership, without those decisions that were made in the early 90s, because I can remember there were numerous buildings that were deteriorating, in bad shape, needed some attention. Without that leadership, without those decisions, would we be talking about a very different Indiana State Fair and Indiana State Fairgrounds today?
Oh, absolutely. I think, Gary, if you think about it, the customer's expectation has changed dramatically. And number one, customers expect to be treated in a superior, having these experiences that are, safe, that they have their food and beverage in a clean environment, just functioning facilities. And so the customer, I think, would have spoken very loudly had those funds not come here. And just look at the state to the north of us, Michigan, no longer has their state fairgrounds in the heart of Detroit. And that's Tennessee is struggling. So we're very fortunate there that collective people. And I also go back to the individual customer of the fair spoke and said, look, this is important to us. This is important to come to Indianapolis and showcase our livestock and be able to showcase these 4-H, wonderful 4-H projects and compete in a way we are so grateful for. You look at High School Marching Band Day. I mean, those are bands from across the state that come here to compete annually. And so those individuals, exhibitors and customers really spoke loudly to their legislators and said, no, this is important to us. And just the idea of gathering and think of it too as we are the number one place where we put agriculture, elevate agriculture to a level that really the pinnacle of showcase of agriculture for the state of Indiana every year.
Talk about relevance, because any entertainment venue, any business, always looking for ways to remain relevant and to remain the focal point in the consumer's eyes. That certainly has to be the case with the Indiana State Fair. How do you, because whether it's entertainment, the offerings, the food, the, all the different things that go into the fair, challenging, more challenging today to keep that relevance in the age of social media and all the other things that are vying for eyeballs these days?
Right. So people have so many other opportunities for going to attractions and going to events and being with their family. I think number one is we keep the foundation. We keep that what brought us here, but we constantly have to evolve and change. And you think about it, I mean, families will say, you know, when we've come to the fair, we always get our saltwater taffy at the stand that's right outside this building. And they expect that to still be there, but they want something new. They want something different. So like, for example, this year we're bringing in a gigantic Lego exhibit and we're in the building called the City of Bricks. We're bringing in new rides. We brought in new fair flavors and foods. We're continuing to elevate the property with some new offerings on the north side, some new structures and some new places where people can gather. And yes, we constantly have to change and evolve and pay attention to what's going in the marketplace. For example, you know, again, back in the day, we did huge grandstand entertainment shows. We've pivoted and now we have this world-class free entertainment that is just something that people just really enjoy. And it covers all different genres of music. And it's free. It's free for people to come out and enjoy. And so I think by adding value, by adding new attractions, by continuing to elevate the experience and always remaining true to that agriculture education, we want people to walk away from the fair learning more about Indiana agriculture than when they came.
Your job is certainly about the Indiana State Fair, but today and representative of the investment, the physical improvements, the changes at the fairgrounds, it's a 365-day-a-year operation. You've got lots of things going on there. You've got hockey, you've got basketball, entertainment, a variety of things. Talk about the impact that folks may not know that the Indiana State Fairgrounds beyond the fair has.
Right. Well, thanks, Gary. I mean, we host over 400 events throughout the year, and that includes minor league hockey, which we're really proud of. Just super excited that last year we were part of the NCAA tournament in the Indiana Farmers Coliseum, but we host a Horizon League tournament in basketball. We have all kinds of what I call consumer shows, which are some of the ones that people love, the boat sport and travel show, the flower and patio show, those type of shows. We do sporting events that happen here, a lot of volleyball, gymnastics, all kinds of activities like that for families. And, you know, one of the things I'm really proud about the team here has done is they have really gotten to a point where they have elevated those year-round events to almost drawing 50% of our revenue is based on those year-round events. And when we started here, it was far less than that. So that growth and importance of that economic impact, again, to the community and what we're able to do. So an example of that is we're about ready to do, put the shovels in the ground for a new venue called the Fall Creek Pavilion that not only will host swine and pigs, being the old swine barn, but it will hopefully be an indoor track and field location. So we're going to purchase a track, a temporary track, put it in the building, and be able to host the NCAA track and field in 2025. So thinking of these structures and the asset of this property, we think of it, again, holistically, 365 days out of the year instead of Our primary responsibility is putting on this annual event, the Great Indiana State Fair. But how can we maximize that usage? This is a building, the Fall Creek Pavilion, that is a taxpayer facility. At the same time, we need to generate revenue so we can put revenue back into the structure, back into this physical plant, and have that customer feel better and better about what they're investing in on the property.
So the fairgrounds really will become part of the amateur sports capital, the sports capital of the world, with assets right there at the fairgrounds.
Oh, yes. Yes. We're really proud of it. I mean, not only will we have two sheets of ice for whether that's hockey or figure skating, but we'll also have this indoor track. And we're really excited about that possibility coming down the line.
What was it like to host March Madness? Because I know, and the folks I talked with at the NCAA and elsewhere were very complimentary of your efforts there. Was that a great opportunity, among other things, to kind of showcase what you have at the fairgrounds?
It was the way I can best describe it is a magical moment in our history. Never in a million years would we have ever thought the renovation of the Indiana Farmers Coliseum would lead to hosting the NCAA tournament. I'm sitting in our living room on Selection Sunday, and they do a flyover over the Indiana Farmers Coliseum and the state fairgrounds. And yeah, it was just kind of a got goosebumps moment in our history. But really, it functioned very well for their needs. And it was, again, during COVID. And so there were a lot of protocols in place that we could accommodate. I think they were very pleased with their results of being at the fairgrounds. And we were equally as pleased. It really was a special, magical moments to see those athletes perform, but also the fans in the stands that were just so excited to be at the games.
And I can remember, Cindy, way back when I was a little guy going to the Coliseum to watch the Pacers.
Right.
And in the smoke-filled rafters, watching the Pacers. That was a thrill back then, too. Hey, we are at the point now in the podcast, Cindy. Each week we do what we call a two-minute drill, which is kind of we'll give you a quick question and have you fire back some answers here. So are you game?
I'm game. Let's go.
Okay. All right. Favorite way to relax?
Being around my grandbabies.
Oceans or mountains?
Mountains.
Favorite snack?
Oh, I'm going to have to go with saltwater taffy. A box of it from the fair.
A fair staple. Now, okay, here's my next one. This is probably unfair, but your favorite fair food or fair treat?
I'm going to have to go for anything that is from a Indiana commodity, whether it's the dairy bar, the pork tent, or the beef cattle tenderloins.
Good answer.
Any one of them.
Good answer. Okay.
Yeah.
Favorite TV show as a kid?
Oh, my goodness. I would have to say the Sunday night Disney.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Biggest pet peeve?
Oh, you know, I try and constantly think about being optimistic and positive. So I don't know if I can answer that. I don't think I have a pet peeve.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perennially positive, right?
Well, try to be, right? Try to.
Okay. I know you've had multiple mentors. Most of us have, but is there a most important or a mentor that really stands out? Someone who's really had an impact on your life?
Yeah, I've got to say two of them, or actually three of them, but Andre Lacy, who is chair of the State Fair Commission, taught me so much about leadership and decision-making, you know, collectively using your resources in times when you had to make some tough decisions. He always had this famous line. He said, good decisions, you do not have to compensate for. Poor decisions, you have to compensate. And then Dr. Cease, who was another chair of the State Fair Commission, just a gentle man that, you know, given a tough HR issue, always dealt with it with an ice cream cone, you know, just...
Here. I know he's a big ice cream fan.
Right?
I do know that, yeah.
And then finally, I've just been very blessed to have been under the leadership of Brad Chambers, who now is our Secretary of Commerce. And as a chair of the State Fair Commission, he's challenged the thinking about property and property management in a way that has been invigorating and exciting. And for all of us, just, you know, wish him the best. The governor couldn't have picked someone better for that role, and just admire him a great deal.
Okay, final question on the two-minute drill. If you had the ultimate dinner, three dinner guests, either living or deceased, who would they be?
Well, you know, I've always loved Theodore Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt. I've been always fascinated with his commitment to the parks and the outdoor space when you're talking about mountains and what he did for the parks. It'd be fascinating to hear his story. And then, of course, you always have to go back to the family and love to have dinner again with Mom and Dad. That'd be really great. Those would be my three.
Great table. Big question we'll answer in the second part of our podcast is how a city girl became the head of the Indiana State Fair, the state's largest agricultural exposition, and much more. We'll delve into that when the Business and Beyond podcast returns.
First Person Advisors is now a subsidiary of National Financial Partners, the fifth largest insurance broker and consultant in the world. Develop your total reward strategies all in one place with the combination of First Person's local expertise and NFP's global resources and integrated solutions. Learn more at firstpersonadvisors.com.
And welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is Cindy Hoy. Cindy is the executive director of the Indiana State Fair Commission. The Indiana State Fair coming up very soon at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, big event that she is getting ready for. Cindy, I have to ask you, though, you're a city girl, right? You grew up in Indianapolis, North Central High School. But really, you were about, 10 minutes or so from the fairgrounds?
Yeah, I think I was one of maybe five kids at North Central that belonged to a 4-H club. I just got hooked on animals early. My uncle had a farm in Wanamaker, about 80 acres, and had a Tennessee Walker horse and had some calves and goats. And we spent a lot of weekends out there on the farm. And so I had a deep, and still do, a deep appreciation for the land and farmland. And then, you know, again, being a city kid and involved in 4-H, I did the typical photography and, fine arts and home furnishings, but always admired those kids in the livestock barns and always wanted to have an animal to show. So grew up raising rabbits and ended up selling the rabbits and bought a steer and kept at my uncle's farm. And
now tell me about, you were, I think, in 1972, the State Fair Rabbit Queen. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it obviously had nothing to do with looks, Gary. It was a competition. You had to know your breeds of rabbits. You had to know about their conformation, disease. So it was testing your knowledge of the rabbit industry. Got a sash and a crown. And but I used to always, after I graduated from college, I always just put that on my resume as just to talk, like, who would say that on a resume, you know? Always had some good laughs and conversation about it. But it was a way that, I think we had 50 rabbits in the garage, and my dad finally said, you know, I can't park my car in the garage anymore, so we got to do something about this. but anyway, that's how it started.
That had to be obviously a fun and favorite memory. Any other favorite memories or times you remember at the fair that really, really stand out?
Yeah. And even to this day, this is one of my biggest loves about this place and this institution is when you walk through the barns and the kids are working on their animals and their mom and dads are helping them, whether that is to groom them, just get them ready to go into the ring. But then you also have the moms and the dads and the aunts and the uncles. So this family unit. So the investment in the animal and the child is really about that family being strong together. And again, it's one of those grounding forces to me too during the fair. Sometimes you can get lost in the carnival rides and the entertainment and the food, but you walk into the barns and you understand that family unit coming together and putting all their effort into that animal and showing it off. It actually, that's the tender moment for me, always has been. And as a part of, you know, when we were talking about earlier, just the foundation of this place, that family commitment is truly that foundation.
Yeah. So obviously you grew up with an appreciation for the State Fair. You went away to college to Southern Methodist University, SMU, in Dallas. And is that really where that stronger fair connection, fair as a career connection began?
Yeah, I mean, it is. So I have always appreciated fairs and decided that I could create a curriculum in kind of the fair world. And so developed a curriculum that applied to working at the State Fair of Texas. And so that fair is a month long in October. And so one of my courses was interning at the Texas State Fair. And then went on to work at a small, when I graduated from college, I became a 4-H agent and worked at a small fair, county fair up in just north of Milwaukee. And it was half owned by the fire department, the city, and half owned by the 4-H leadership. And so this each fair has while the foundations are similar with agriculture and education and entertainment, they all have kind of a different soul to them. And by going to working at that small county fair, by working at the Marion County Fair, by Texas, and then ultimately a full-time position at the Wisconsin State Fair, and just learn the rhythm and the soul of each one a little bit differently. And the special part about this fair for Hoosiers and Indiana to know is there's no other state that elevates 4-H like we do and really showcases it in three different buildings in all the barns when the 4-H'ers are competing. And there's no other state that has a pioneer village like we have. And so those are a couple pieces that, you know, or can't be replicated, and just the attention to the blend. And this is another one of my favorite elements of the fair is blending that urban and rural connection. And it just warms my heart when you see such a diverse crowd of people just loving their state fair and coming for different reasons and just experiencing just a wonderful summer night with their family. And that just is very heartwarming.
And I know you consider the renovation, the massive transformation, if you will, of the Coliseum, $60+ million, is one of the highlights of your career, right?
Yeah. And the fascinating part of the Coliseum is, again, it was a commitment that, again, applied to Governor Daniels and his commitment to it. We also raised $10 million to support it. But it's such an interesting story in that it was the entire four walls remained and everything from the four walls in was demolished and then rebuilt. And it was rebuilt as an arena for those big draft horses, the 6-horse hitches and the 8-horse hitches that come into the arena. So it started there and then we built it up from there and preserved this iconic place that had so many memories. Again, one of my aha moments was when we closed the Coliseum, we opened the doors to the public and said, hey, come say goodbye. You know, you've had memories, we've had memories. And just to hear the stories that people told when they walked through the building and their memories of the old Pacer games that they went to, or some of the old circuses, or, you know, public skating back in the day. I mean, it was, again, it meant something. And it just, again, warms my heart. Another story of just preserving this institution and continuing to make it better. And I think that's always been my foundation in being in this role is take care of it, make it better.
Another development there, several years old now, but the Glass Barn partnership, I know with the Indiana Soybean Alliance, but as I recall, that's really about education and showcasing careers in Indiana agriculture and that connection. Do you, as you look to the future of the fair, do you see that as an important element, you know, of the fair, kind of showcasing to these young people, hey, there are careers in agriculture and ag bioscience and those types of areas?
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes. The glass barn was developed as a nod to, let's be transparent with agriculture. Let's show the public how their food is grown. Let's show the public how we take care of the animals that are feeding you. And so the Indiana Soybean Alliance and farmers' commitment to do that was monumental and gave us a platform for going back in history. You know, the fair started with an opportunity for farmer to come together and tell their best practices and share ideas during the fair. Now our role is for a farmer to teach the consumer where their food comes from. So we've worked with Corteva Soybean to bring farmers in and tell their stories. And their stories now are bigger than just providing the food. They are telling the story about what are opportunities for careers in agriculture, not the same old way you think of the farmer in the overalls back in the day, but rather, you know, with technology and with the efforts of Agrinovus. I mean, there is an opportunity for us going forward to tell more of a story. And we actually have a master plan of really what we're calling internally a state fair farm that will do just that. Because as I've said before, we have to continue to elevate and change, and not only to keep that foundation of what we're all about, but continue to make it better with technology and career development too, as you said.
So a lot going on, obviously, not only at the Indiana State Fair, but also at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. Dramatic transformation that has occurred there. Cindy Hoy, the executive director of the Indiana State Fair Commission. Cindy, always great to be with you. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations on all the successes and the growth and really what lies ahead, because it looks like the fair's future is indeed very strong.
Thanks, Gary. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. It is a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can catch all of our episodes and Indiana Business News 24/7 at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. We'll see you next time.